You're listening to Next Stop CPA, the official podcast for the CPA exam, brought to you by the AICPA.
Hey guys, Lauren here with another episode of Next Stop CPA. Today we have with us Michael Kimball, Audit Associate at BKD CPAs and Advisors. Michael's located in Louisville, Kentucky, and is a CPA and a 2018 Elijah Watts Sells Award winner. What's the Elijah Watts Sells Award, you ask? So each spring since 1923, the AICPA has bestowed the award to some of the exam's highest performing candidates who meet a certain set of eligibility criteria. So to qualify, you have to have obtained a cumulative average score above 95.50 across all four sections of the exam and passed all four sections of the exam on your first attempt. No easy feat. And of the nearly 100,000 test takers we see each year, there are generally only about 100 people who qualify for the Sells Award, give or take. You can learn more about the Sells Award on the AICPA website. But getting back to our guest today, Michael is in a small group of people who've earned this award, and so we figured he probably has some helpful tips and words of advice when it comes to formulating a successful exam strategy. So without further ado, Michael, thank you for being here with us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, beyond that you figured out how to simply slay the CPA exam?
Well, it's good to be here today. So I'm in my first year in public accounting. I did my master's at William Mary in Virginia last year, and then I graduated with my undergrad degree from University of Louisville here in Louisville, Kentucky. I decided to go into public accounting and go this route, I guess, because I really enjoy seeing different businesses and helping businesses succeed. I like meeting different people and understanding how different industries operate. And even if I don't stick with public accounting long term, I can really see how this experience and how the CPA license itself can be really beneficial for me going forward.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think there's probably a lot of people in a similar boat to you. Maybe they'll start off in public, but won't inevitably stay there. I think we're going to get to sort of the meat here right away, which a lot of our listeners probably want to know about. What was your general strategy that helped you earn a perfect score on AUD, pass all four sections on your first attempt, and receive the EW Sells Award, Elijah Watts Sells Award?
I guess when I thought about my strategy, really what overarched it was making sure that I had a good understanding of the material that would be tested. So I guess the way I operate is like I can't just memorize things, you know, like that doesn't work well for me. It would take a lot of time for me to do that. Some people are great at memorizing, that's just not me, and I know myself, and so I really tried to understand the material. And part of that was through classes, but a lot of it was through studying with Becker, CPA prep. And I guess, you know, before we really get into all of this, I'll say that everyone kind of needs to figure out what strategy will work for them. Everyone studies differently and has different strengths and weaknesses. And I think the sooner that you can identify that, the better when it comes to the CPA exam. I did have to memorize some things. I'll say that, like, you're not going to get away from that. One example are the COSA framework keywords. I believe that's in the BEC section. You know, that's just something that's going to show up on the exam. It doesn't necessarily make intuitive sense why those words are correlated with the different parts of COSO. And so that's something that you just have to memorize. And then when I talk about critical material, like that's important too, because the CPA exam, a lot of what makes it hard is the breadth of material that could possibly be on the exam. And so when you think about critical material, it's important to identify like what are the examiners most likely to test, because you only have a limited amount of time to study no matter what stage of life you're in. And so if you're using Becker, and I'm sure a lot of other materials are the same way, the instructors tend to point out in the lectures what test items are heavily tested. And then when you're looking at how they're designing their review materials, they tend to put more multiple choice questions on the topics that will most likely be covered more heavily. So again, those are really helpful indicators that help me, pursue a strategy that was as efficient as I felt it could be, and also help prepare me well for exam day.
Got it. And so it sounds like you had a good mix of some memorization, but not just that. I mean, it's a lot of it is, you know, critical thinking and really being able to connect the material together, finding the right review course. And, you know, as we've said in previous episodes, we don't promote any specific review courses. It's awesome that Becker worked for you. And we've heard from a lot of people that review courses in general, just, you know, it's that added help that some people need. And now, did you find that your work and educational experience was helpful with your exam prep?
I did. You know, I guess working for a public accounting firm, I had an internship before I started the exam, and it was during busy season. It was an audit internship. So that was really helpful for the audit simulations, because the way the examiners have designed those sims, it's very similar to a lot of the field work that we're doing in audit. So that was helpful going into it. I was familiar with those work papers and how those sims were laid out. And then in terms of other coursework, I had a great governmental professor at William & Mary. She was a former partner and had lots of experience in governmental. And so that made it to where I really didn't have to spend much time at all reviewing governmental for the FAR section of the exam, which was a big deal for me. I only had 4 weeks to study for FAR, which was the least amount of time I had to study for any section. And that section was probably the hardest for me. So it was great that I was able to cut out, I think, just the governmental portion of the exam is between 5% and 15%. So I really didn't have to spend much time studying there. So I think when you're thinking about your classes, like, think about areas that you're struggling in. Think about areas that, like, you love the class, you had a great professor. Those are probably going to be the ones where you maybe can cut back on your study time a little bit. But just be aware, like, if you've never had a governmental class, it's very different from our other types of accounting. So you're really going to have to put in extra time to make sure that you understand it and that you're able to teach yourself well. So again, it's definitely on a person by person basis.
That's a good point you make. So did you sort of plan out the order of the sections you wanted to take based on, you know, what was most fresh in your mind and the classes that you had most recently taken?
So I was, when I started the exam, I just graduated from University of Louisville, and I was getting into my master's degree. I had a year to do the degree, and I started. I had a start date with BKD in January of the following year. So I really had a year to do my master's degree and the exam. So it was a very intense year. I was taking 15, 16 credit hours per semester. So I started studying FAR the first couple weeks in January and realized there's no way I can do this before the end of Q1 testing window, just because of the breadth of FAR and in the amount of coursework that I had. And so after a week of that, I switched over to audit, and that was very doable. And so I did audit, and then I did BEC for the next quarter testing window, right around finals. And so I planned it out that way, because those sections, when you're looking at the amount of studying that's required for them, you know, Becker essentially says that the study time is about half of what the FAR and reg take. So that was manageable. And then over the summer, I took the two longer sections, FAR and reg, and I think that worked out really well.
So your order was AUD, BEC, FAR, and reg. So were the first two a little bit, in your experience, easier for you, or you felt going in a little more confident with the material?
Yes, I think I enjoy audit, and so that was a really good one for me to start out with. I felt like I had a good understanding of it going in to audit, and I would say the material is hard on all of them. It's just the breadth of material that's different, and the volume. So the volume of material that can be potentially covered on BEC, you know, it's about half of what can be covered on FAR. And so, like, even though I really, finance and operations management, like, those are some of my weaker areas academically, it was still an easier exam because it was half the material. So I think that's helpful when you're thinking about when to schedule these. If you're in the middle of busy season, it might be harder to do FAR if you're on a tight schedule. You might consider doing BEC or audit.
That's some good advice. And did you find that there was, like, a magic number of hours that you had to dedicate to studying for each section that worked well for you?
You know, I didn't. I guess I didn't pay as much attention to hours while I was going through it. It was more, my biggest takeaway is putting in the time, you know, making sure that you put in whatever time you need to do to understand the material. And so for me, I was tracking right around, Becker's estimate of time for studying, and so it ended up being around 400 hours total, which is about what they say it will take. And so I think the only one that I was way under on was FAR, and that was just because I was on an accelerated timetable. So I really could have used more time in FAR, I think, but I passed the exam, and that's really what matters. But if I had the choice, I would have taken more time with it.
Okay. And now you've taken some mock exams, right, as part of your preparation and obviously gotten scores from the mock exams. How did you find your mock exam scores compared to the actual scores that you got from the actual exam?
Yeah, that was really interesting for me on the first exam, because I didn't have any experience with this and I didn't understand how the exam was scored. So my first mock exam that I took was for audit, and I got a 79 on the mock exam. And then I got a 72 on my second mock exam for audit. And in audit was the one where I got the 99, which was the perfect score. And so I went back after that and tried to understand, okay, so what are these mock exam scores really telling me? And going forward, it was very similar. I was consistently scoring in the 70s and 80s on the mock exam. I think what's important to realize is that those mock exam scores are percentages. So they're the percentage correct that I got out of the total number of questions. It's the percentage I got correct. Where the CPA exam score, it's not on a 0 to 100 scale. It's not a percentage. It's a score. And the AICPA says that it's not curved. And they score and scale the test to make sure it's not easier or more difficult to pass at different points in time. It's also, that score is based on the difficulty of the test question. So the examiners use a methodology to basically your performance on the first multiple choice test list determines the difficulty of the second test list. And this allows the examiners to gauge your understanding of the material with fewer questions. That's the testing science behind it. And not to mention, there are pre-test questions thrown in there. So there's these questions that don't count towards your score that the examiners are putting in there so that they can figure out, are these good questions? Should we put them in future exams? Or are these problematic and would they skew our scoring and skew participant, skew the outcomes? So all of that to say, like, it's very difficult to go into the exam, go through the entire exam on test day, and come out and know how you did. So that's why a lot of people say, oh, I know I passed, or I know I failed, but they don't actually know how they did. You know, they might be sure that they failed, and then they get to the score release day, and they got an 80, you know. And then this is the other reason why there's such a disconnect between the mock exam score and the real score. The scoring methodology is completely different. So I think that's important to understand, and especially because, like, it's not a reason to get discouraged if you're getting below a 70 on those mock exam scores. It's really more important to make sure that you're going back, looking at those answer explanations, and then making sure that you're understanding what material am I getting wrong, why am I getting it wrong, and maybe brushing up on that material in the couple weeks heading up to your exam day.
You know, it's pretty clear based on your very specific explanations of it that you really did your homework about how the exam process, how the scoring works. Do you find that helped you sort of overall with just having that understanding of how everything works, doing your research beforehand, not just studying the content of the exam, but really knowing the full process? Do you think that helped you overall?
I think it did. Yeah, it was very helpful, I think, in understanding how those mock exams worked, because the final review, I guess that became a key part of my strategy, because when you look at my timing, for BEC, I took 7 weeks to study for that. And a lot of people would say, well, you know, that's probably too long for BEC. You should probably compress that so that you're not forgetting material. I was doing this during the semester, so it would have been hard to do that because I was studying for classes. And so the final review became a really critical part. I would go back and take the two, or they eventually released a third mock exam with Becker, and I would take those three exams, and then I would go back and look through all the questions, look through all the ones I got wrong, and then make a review sheet, and then I would study that review sheet. And this all happened in the last week and a half before the exam, and it really helped me brush up on my material that I was forgetting and material that I never really understood in the first place. And I think having that exam score, the mock exam score, contextualized, understanding what does that really mean and how does that relate to the real exam score, I think that was helpful just from a mental perspective, you know, like not getting discouraged if you're getting a really low score, and just being confident and sticking with your study strategy. I think that was really helpful.
And was a big part of your strategy time management? You know, you were studying for school, for classes, but the exam at the same time. I can't imagine it was easy to budget your time with everything going on.
Yeah, that was really important, especially for FAR. I did FAR in about a month, and I had a lot going on that month. And so I found that, like, putting study time on my calendar was really helpful. You know, while I was in the semester, it was different. You know, you're in a structured system, like you're going to classes every day. And so I just took all day Saturday and studied for the CPA exam. And I did that every week, and fewer distractions, I guess, during class time. But during the summer, you know, there's a whole lot going on, and I still wanted to move time for my friends and family during that month. And I had a wedding that I went to. And so the only way I was able to do that was to put it on the calendar, and then put in that time, make sure that I really stuck with that. I think that was the key, is like not trying to figure out a shortcut. You know, I put in the time, and I think that was really helpful. And then I guess making sure that, like, if I needed more time on something, that I was able to be flexible in that and add more time to the calendar if I really needed it.
So basically there's no shortcuts that you can take. You know, you budget out that time, you carve it out, you know, while making everything else fit at the same time, sounds like. So let's talk about, you know, the day before each exam section that you took, what were your sort of last minute final review, you know, strategies, or if you have any tips for anybody who's wondering, you know, the day before I take my exam, what should I do? What can help me, you know, on the following day?
Yeah. I think part this is definitely, it depends on your personality and, you know, what works for you. What do you do before the ACT? What did you do before the GMAT? What did you do before that final that you got an A on? Like, think back to those days, and I think that can be really helpful. For me, I mean, sometimes it came down to studying and taking a mock exam the day before. That's not really ideal, but just with the scheduling and how it worked out, that's sometimes what I had to do. I think it was helpful if I had taken them a little bit earlier, and that way I was just able to look through my review sheet the day before and get ready. Another thing I did, I mean, just practically, is making sure that I knew where my testing center was and knew how to get there, how much time I would need to get there, and what the traffic might look like. Just really anything you can do to take the stress off for exam day, I think is helpful the day before.
And that might be something people don't always think about. You know, you're very focused on the exam and taking the exam, but, you know, those things like planning out your route, the traffic, how long is it going to take to get there? Those are all things that leading up to your exam day can be very helpful. Now, can you walk us through your actual exam day experience? You know, did you have a specific strategy in mind? Do you have any traditions that you like to follow leading up to it?
Yeah, I always, again, this is a lot of this is personal preference, but I always scheduled an afternoon exam because it left plenty of time for traffic. In Louisville, the testing center is very easy to access, but while I was in Williamsburg in Virginia studying for my master's, I had to drive about an hour and a half to get to an exam center. And there was a potential for a lot of traffic. So I always left like really early and made sure that I got to, I chose Chick-fil-A because I like Chick-fil-A. And so I got there kind of early and made sure that I had a good breakfast or lunch. And I even looked over my review sheet during that time too. Again, like some people that was stressing out way too much. So like, I don't think that's necessarily a universal recommendation, but for me, I just don't deal with that kind of test anxiety. And so like it was helpful and beneficial for me to do that. And then I just made sure that I was relaxed and made sure that I was aware of what the security procedures would be like at the testing center. You know, it's pretty intense. You have to get you have to get wanded and fingerprinted, and you know, you have to lift up your pant leg to show them your ankles to make sure you aren't trying to smuggle anything into the testing center. So
they don't kid around with that.
They don't. So yeah, understanding that, especially if you do struggle with test anxiety, I think that might be helpful in reducing some of that. And then I tried to celebrate, I guess, after the exam. You know, obviously you don't know your score yet, but you just spent all this time studying for a section of the exam and you took it, and that's a big deal. And you might have three more to go. And so I think it's important to celebrate even after you take the exam, because you don't want to get burned out in this process. Like, you have to pace yourself and make sure that you're maintaining balance in your life, because I took the exam in a 7-month period, which is kind of, it might be a little shorter than a lot of people, but if I had just like gone 100% that full 7 months, I mean, I would have been burned out. So I think it's important to recognize that and make sure that you're having good self-care.
Yeah, that's a good point. Take little mental breaks here and there to avoid the burnout. So we know what it was like going into the test center. What about when you walked out after each of the four sections? You know, you're 4 hours later, you're probably kind of tired, maybe a little hungry. What's on your mind? Are you thinking, yeah, I aced this, or I really don't know. I have no idea how I did.
Yeah, so walking out of audit, of course, that was my first section, and I really had no idea how I did. I was actually pretty concerned because I had finished, I guess, an hour and a half early on audit. I didn't really pace myself in the simulations like I wanted to, and so I was pretty concerned. And I also didn't understand the scoring methodology and stuff. So I think I may have focused a little bit more on those pre-test questions that weren't actually factored in as part of my score. That was my first experience. And after that first exam, I got a little bit more, I felt a little bit better about it, but I never really knew how I did as I was walking out of the exam. Like, you know, I felt like I put in enough work and the amount of work that I wanted to on all of the exams. And so I felt okay about that as I was walking out. But there's still a part of me that questioned, you know, what was that enough? And like some of the questions I saw on the exams were just, you know, they were really hard and I really struggled with them. And I, you know, in the other sections, I definitely got them wrong. And so like, I think for me, I focus on those questions a lot. And so I just kind of had to move on to the next section and keep studying and wait for that score to come out. And it just felt good to be out of that exam room after 4 hours. So.
Oh, I can imagine. And to try not to dwell on any fears or concerns. Yeah. And I just want to go back. You mentioned you thought you might have put a little more time than you should have into the pretest questions, which just for our audience, those are generally questions that the test taker does not know are pretest questions. They're not like labeled, you know, these will not count towards your exam score. So, just kind of having that strategy in place and pacing yourself out. Now, you mentioned your pace on the simulations. You know, you thought you could have done a little differently. What was your approach with the simulations?
Yeah, so with the simulations, on the first test, which was audit, I guess I moved through them really quickly. I I think I probably could have spent more time on them. I guess it worked out in the end, and if I had gotten one incorrect, it must have been a pretest question, or the scaling must have worked out to get me up to a 99. But I realized coming out of that exam that, wow, I could have used the authoritative literature, which is a resource that they provide you on the simulations. Basically, you can look up in the audit codification or in the tax code and find different answers to questions they might be asking you for the research questions. They might ask you, you know, what's the tax rule on this item? And you have to go and give them the reference in the tax code to that. And you get to look through the tax code and find those references. Well, that same authoritative literature is available on simulations that don't have a research question, that don't require you to put in like a tax code reference. And so although like you shouldn't get buried in it, like you shouldn't rely on it, it can still be helpful for some of the simulations. And I think I could have gotten to the answer quicker if I had just used authoritative literature. I just forgot about it because they weren't asking for a codification reference or for a tax code reference. So I think that was something I would have done differently on the first exam. And on the others, that, you know, as I went along and as I got to FAR and REG, I actually studied the simulations less in Becker materials, just because I felt like I had the form of the questions down at that point. And so really the problem was the content. And so to get the content, it felt more efficient for me to go through lots of multiple choice questions to get through a lot of different topics quickly, rather than spending 20 minutes on a simulation. So that was my approach. I think it's really important to have a good grasp of the form and content of the simulations first, though, before you decide to skip those, because they're a really important part of the exam. And that's the way that the examiners are moving as they're thinking about designing the CPA exam. So they're, it's a significant portion of your score. So it's important to understand how to approach those, I think, and practicing is a good way to do that.
That's some really good advice. And you actually answered my next question about, you know, having performed so well on the exam, there's still things that you might have done a little bit differently now looking back. Is there anything else you would have done differently in terms of preparation or setting a strategy or time management or the timing of anything? If not, that's perfectly okay.
Yeah, you know, I've had people joke with me that, you know, you really study too much, like you overstudy, right? You only need a 75 to pass, and that's really like my CPA certificate, you know, my license will say the same thing that everyone else's license does, and I think that's a really good point. And I got that feedback as I was going through the exam too, but, you know, I didn't feel like I could reduce my studying or do something different without worrying that I wouldn't pass the exam. And so I think the takeaway there is like, find a study strategy that works for you. You know, think about some of these pieces of advice and would they work for me? And the ones that would, you know, try them out and figure out what does work and then stick with it. I think that's really important, is perseverance and grit when it comes to the exam. So I don't know if I would do a whole lot differently, honestly.
Okay. And so I know that getting the email from NASBA with your scores it's always kind of a, you know, it can be exciting but stressful for people. So what did it feel like when you got that email specifically about with Aud getting a perfect score? Like, what was that like opening that up and seeing a perfect score? Like, what kind of just feelings rushed through?
I was kind of blown away, honestly, because the exam was really hard and I struggled through it. So I couldn't believe it at first. Like it didn't even seem real. It was very early, first thing in the morning. I was checking the Kentucky State Board website, refreshing for them to upload. And yeah, it was wild seeing that. And it felt really, really good, especially after putting in some really long hours and hard work to get there. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
And now that, you know, you're officially a CPA, what Do you find it was all worth it? You find having those three letters after your name has been advantageous for you in your career?
Well, I will say I'm not officially a CPA yet. I will finish up my 1 year of experience requirement in January, and then I'll receive my license at that point. But yeah, it'll be really incredible. I'm looking forward to that day and that ceremony, and I think it's really cool to be a part of a profession that values integrity and protecting the financial markets. And I think that we really provide a great service to the public and to businesses. And so it's pretty cool to be a part of that. I'm not sure how long I'll stick with public accounting. I really like it right now, and I love being an auditor. But I think the CPA license itself is really valuable wherever you go, from public accounting into corporate or internal audit. I think it's really valuable here in the U.S. and around the world.
Awesome. And any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I would say, stick with it, put in the time, and persevere. Make sure that you have that grit, and I think if you put in the time and do that, then you'll do really well. If you graduate with your degree in accounting and you're in public accounting, you're trying to get the CPA license done, like, you probably have what it takes to do the CPA exam. It really just comes down to how much work are you willing to put into it, and how consistent are you willing to be with your study habits. And I think that everyone has the resources there to make it happen and to do that. I'm definitely excited about all the new CPAs coming on. It's pretty cool to be able to share my experience, and I hope it was helpful for some people.
I think very much. Michael, really appreciate your time today. By the way, I tried Chick-fil-A for the very first time last week, and it was it was like a game changer for me. Yeah, I don't know why I'd never tried it. I grew up in an area that didn't have a lot of Chick-fil-A's. I was always all about Taco Bell, but I had to get to Chick-fil-A, and I did, and oh my God. I worry for my health now. But yeah, it was delicious. But thank you so much, Michael. Really, really appreciate your time here. And thank you. And I hope this has been helpful for our listeners.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, take care.
Thanks for listening to Next Stop CPA. Got an idea for an upcoming episode topic, or just want to let us know what you think of the podcast? Share your thoughts with us at nextstopcpa@aicpa-cima.com. And don't forget to visit aicpa.org/CPA exam for the latest exam info.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.